You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
There's two symptoms that most of my patients complain about, and that's number one, I have fatigue. And then number two is I have brain fog with memory loss. Now, memory loss is embarrassing, but more importantly, it creates a great deal of fear in us. My 86-year-old mom says often, Suzanne, I don't want old timers. I don't want old timers in her broken English. I think we all feel as my mother feels. We don't want to suffer from this debilitating disease, which accounts for 60 to 80% of all dementia cases. So what can we do to prevent memory loss and other cognitive abilities that can interfere with our daily life? It's called brain food. Now, Dr. Lisa Moscone, Associate Director of the Alzheimer Prevention Clinic at Weill Cornell Medical College and Presbyterian Hospital in New York, she's here. She's here to talk about her new book, Brain Food, The Surprising Science of Eating for Cognitive Power. Awesome. So happy to have you here, Dr. Moscone. Can we jump right into the five top foods we all need to maintain a healthy brain?
Sure, we have. We surely can. Thank you so much for having me today. It's such a pleasure. So the top five foods for brain health. I would say my number one food is caviar. Do you like caviar?
No, not really, but you know what? Maybe I'll start. Well, you know, it's not that I don't eat the typical caviar. I've eaten eggs from fish, but it's a Korean fish that I've known about, but I'm sure it's the same thing. Caviar is just fish eggs.
Yes, it is. I think it's the fancy word for fish eggs. Is caviar. But the thing about caviar is that it contains a very unique blend of nutrients that are really perfect for the brain. So it's like a really potent, supercharged blend of omega-3 fats that are really important for the brain, choline, a B vitamin that is needed to literally make memories, B vitamins that are needed to support the nervous system, including the brain, all sorts of minerals like iron and magnesium, a good amount of protein, and also antioxidant vitamins like vitamin A and vitamin C, which is very unique for animal food. So it's really perfect for the brain. If that's impractical or inaccessible, and some people actually don't like it, then fatty fish would be my recommended everyday alternative, like Alaskan salmon or mackerel or bluefish, sardines, anchovies. Those are all really high in omega-3s that your brain needs really, really badly on a daily basis. So that would be my first food. Then dark leafy greens like spinach, Swiss chard, kale, all sorts of greens. These are really good for your brain. And they're rich in disease-fighting nutrients, as well as fiber, that is really important also for a healthy digestion. And then berries. Most people think that blueberries are the best berries one can eat, but actually blackberries are much more anti-aging, if you will, because they contain more antioxidants than blueberries do. So they're sweet, sort of, but they also have a low glycemic index. So they help actually stabilize blood sugar levels. And that's really good for the brain. Then I'm Italian, so I'm very partial to extra virgin olive oil that is very rich in omega-3s, but also vitamin E and monounsaturated fat, a kind of fat that is really good for the heart. And what is good for the heart is also good for the brain. And then I would say my last one is water. Most people, so many people just don't drink water. And the brain is 80% water. And every reaction that takes place in the brain needs water to occur. Even energy production needs water. So the brain is very sensitive to dehydration. And we need to drink plenty of water to make sure that our brains are at their best.
Let's talk a little bit about each one. I mean, it doesn't have to be each one, but I want to ask more questions because this is awesome.
Okay.
Number one, I've never had anyone come on the show and talk about caviar, so that's what's exciting. But I want to ask you this. How about the amount? I mean, how much do you recommend of caviar per day? I mean, caviar can be expensive. So let's talk a little bit about the amount that we should be eating.
A teaspoon.
Oh, that's
is
it.
Plenty.
One teaspoon.
So, you know, caviar is expensive. So I would say salmon roe is a really good and much cheaper alternative. It's like fish eggs from a salmon. And you can get them online. It's like $10 is enough for an entire week. It's actually probably for 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay.
You need so little. You know, you need just a little bit. Also, I wouldn't expect anyone to eat caviar every single day. You know, it's such a peculiar flavor. That's more like, I would because I love it. But I know that most people don't. So I think switching between fish eggs or salmon roe and fatty fish like salmon, sardines, anchovies. I think like a balance of all these foods is more important. And I would say a lot of Americans don't eat fish, right?
Well, you know, my problem about that is because of the mercury in the you know, ocean these days. So in my practice, a lot of my patients are vegan. A lot of my patients don't eat fish. And also, I don't eat a lot of fish. I don't recommend it because of the mercury. But is there another alternative, doctor? Is there another alternative?
Vegan, yes. I'll have to say then vegan omega-3 supplement. You have to take omega-3 supplements. It's really important for the brain. And if people don't like fish, then obviously they wouldn't take fish oil supplement. Then I would say there are some vegan options that are made from maybe flax seeds. Flax seeds are a really good source of omega-3s.
Hemp seeds are good sources.
But I think you need more. Like we should all get at least 2 grams of omega-3s per day. So you have to eat like a pound of flax seeds to get 2 full grams.
Right. That's an important fact, is that you definitely do want more. You want to eat more of that in volume, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the thing is, I don't know if you want to get into these details, but there are different forms of omega-3s. There's DHA, that is the specific brain omega-3, and that only comes from fish. And then there are forms of omega-3s that you can find in plants, but it's usually ALA. And then ALA needs to be converted to DHA, and 75% is lost in the process. So basically, if you need to get 2 grams of omega-3 per day, then you should try and get 75% more to make sure that you get enough of the DHA form that the brain needs.
Yeah, that's so important what you're saying.
Too much information?
No, I love all that information.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. We all know about eating tons of veggies and greens and doing all the colors of the rainbow colors. But, you know, my favorite berry, not a lot of people know about it, is called chokeberries. Do you know what chokeberries are? They're
aronia.
Chokeberries, also known as aronia berries. The way I get it is I get it dried because you won't find it at the regular stores. I get the organic dried ones online, and chokeberries apparently have the highest level of antioxidants. The ORAC value is like, gosh, I don't know, 50 times more than like berries, regular berries. So it's pretty strong. And I eat it dry and I just pop it in my shakes.
Yeah, nice. That's a good
idea. Yes. And I love the fact that you talked about water being one of your top five, because I'm a big believer of clean water. Of course, not tap water, clean water.
Yeah.
And with that being said, how much water do you drink?
Oh, I drink so much water. I would say 2 or 3 liters every day.
Every day. Yes. And if you're an athlete.
Every day, 2 or 3 liters.
Yeah.
Do you?
If you're an athlete. Yes.
It's so important.
I drink plenty. But, you know, especially on days that you're exercising.
Yeah.
I didn't hear your response there.
What was the question?
Oh, no, I was just saying that if you exercise or do anything that's out when it's really hot, it's super important that you drink more.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's go into, now that we've talked about food.
You add the more water you need, yes.
Now that we've talked about food and water, what is the connection between the brain and the gut health? How much do you believe that we've got to clean up the gut to clean up the brain?
I do believe in it. I do. There's quite good evidence that if you have inflammation in your gut, or if your microbiome is not balanced and you have more bad bacteria than good bacteria, that really impacts your brain. Right now, it looks like the strongest connection is with anxiety and depression. Something happens in the brain when the bad bacteria in the gut they just outnumber the good bacteria, and they start releasing all sorts of toxins in the bloodstream that can actually affect brain function. So people with an unfavorable microbiome usually, they may show increased anxiety and depression. And right now we're starting to, I specifically don't study the microbiome, but I find that really, really fascinating that it may actually affect aging of the brain. It looks like people who consume diets that are very low in carbohydrates and fiber and that are very high in fat show higher rates of dementia as they get older, and they show cognitive decline more than people who really follow a high carbohydrate, high fiber diet with very small amounts of animal fat. So your vegan clients, your vegan patients would be happy to hear that, I guess.
Okay, so, you know, people would say, well, fat is good for your brain. Brain is fatty, right? People have said that. So what you're saying is that it's the type of fats. Let's be clear, it's the animal fat that you're talking about, not like vegetarian fats.
I don't know if anybody has ever looked into that specifically, but in general, so that's actually very interesting. I heard that too. A lot of people say the brain is made of fat, so we should eat a lot of fat to replenish the fat in the brain, right? And for a neuroscientist like me, that's really bizarre, because by and large, the fat that we eat from foods cannot even get inside the brain. And I realize that a lot of people are not aware of that. There are barriers that protect the brain from the outside. And there are gates in the barriers that only let specific nutrients get inside the brain. And fats cannot get inside the brain, other than the omega-3s that we were talking about before. So omega-3s, omega-6, omega-9s, I think. Those specific kind of fats, they're called polyunsaturated fatty acids, they can enter inside the brain. The other kinds of fat cannot, like cholesterol cannot get inside the brain ever. Saturated fat, only when we're kids, basically. Like children all the way to teenagers, their brains can actually use saturated fat. But after adolescence, it just doesn't use it anymore. So that's a little bit of a paradox that I find between science and what people get to hear about outside of academia. And it was very, very surprising to me when I started, because my patients would be like, oh, so I should eat a lot of fat. I was like, no, why are you saying that? And somehow now it's a popular trend, I'm told, right? That a lot of people are ditching carbohydrates for fat.
Yes, yes. I mean, people that are believers of ketogenic diets believe that it's not only good for your brain function, but it can also help with brain diseases. I wanted to ask you a question, because you mentioned that cholesterol can't get through. Aren't all cells made, some of the building blocks of the membrane of cells, aren't they part of cholesterol's part of that?
Yes, I'm sorry, I lost you for a second, but yes. So the brain contains a lot of cholesterol, but it doesn't come from food. The thing is, the brain can make cholesterol itself. So as soon as we're born, the brain starts producing cholesterol because it needs the cholesterol just to build neurons or brain cells. But that cholesterol, number one, is made by the brain itself, and it's got nothing to do with the diet.
That is great. That is great to know that. But, you know, you mentioned earlier that there's, you know, when we've got like a gut dysbiosis and we've got bad bacteria and toxins get into the bloodstream, that's from what, you know, it's called hyperpermeability of the gut lining. I believe that there's also hyperpermeability of that blood-brain barrier. There's a leaky gut, leaky brain. And so then those toxins, the LPSs, the lipopolysaccharides, toxins from bacteria, little protein parts, I believe they can get into the brain. I'd love to hear your take on that.
I completely agree. I totally agree. What happens as people get older is that the blood-brain barrier deteriorates. You know, it's made of cells in the same way that the rest of our body ages, so the blood-brain barrier ages too. And then it starts to get more permeable and more things can get through that should not get through. And that's the case, for instance, with Alzheimer's patients. At some point, they have vascular damage and vascular disease that really affects the permeability of the blood-brain barrier, and then much more toxins and pathogens can enter the brain, whereas that doesn't usually happen when we're younger. And yes, like what you said, there seems to be a connection between the enzymes that are being produced and the fatty acids that are produced by the microbes in the gut and the function of the blood-brain barrier. There's some microbes produce fatty acids that actually make the barrier more resistant, and some other microbes produce enzymes that influence the blood-brain barrier in a way that improves opening of these gates when it shouldn't. So they're kind of hacking our brain in a way from the outside. They're smart microbes. You know, we should be very mindful of what we put into our bodies.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm constantly reading more and more studies about the actions of our bacteria and how it affects the mood. You mentioned earlier that there's a big connection about anxiety, right? Was it anxiety and depression you mentioned?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how it's related to our gut and the inflammatory reactions. I would love to know in your book, I haven't looked at it yet. I'd love to know what kind of foods, the ones that you said you're five, I'm a big believer in fermented foods, cultured foods, probiotics that are naturally made in foods that we ferment. Which ones do you like?
Oh, I like them all. I really like sauerkraut. I like them. Fermented veggies like carrots, ginger, beets. We eat them all. I have like three jars in the fridge. Yogurt, because my daughter is two, and so she needs to really build up a strong immune system, and that starts in the gut. And so I make sure that she eats all this kind of fermented foods and really good quality yogurt without sugar. yes, we eat them daily.
Well, you mentioned that you have a little one, and I know many of our listeners have children, and we want to give them the foods that are going to continue to help them build brain power. Besides fermented foods, and you mentioned yogurt, what else can you give your children?
Oh, my daughter is very special in some ways. She really eats foods that most babies wouldn't necessarily like. Like she will demand goji berries as a snack. And in the morning, she drinks aloe juice with me, aloe vera juice every morning. And she eats fish like 3-4 times a week. So I think I try and make sure that she has foods like oats. Oats are very good for you. They're very high in fiber. They have a low glycemic index. So they give you steady energy without impacting your insulin levels, which is good. Berries, ulcer to berries, apples, plums. She really likes plums, like prunes, like dried prunes. She likes that a lot. Sweet potatoes, eggs, yogurt that we mentioned, yogurt, fish, greens, spinach, avocado. Some people say that the fat composition of avocados is actually similar to that of breast milk. So it's a really good source of healthy fats that also promote blood flow to the brain. So I make sure that my daughter's name is Lily, and she eats it 3, 4, or 5 times a week. She really likes it. Olive oil, a lot of oil, olive oil. I think the most important thing is to make sure that the kids are eating real food. Like, if you look at the food around you, I think it's easy to notice that there's packaged foods, processed foods, refined foods, pretty much everywhere. And I think what's really important to make sure for a baby to grow healthy and smart is to avoid foods like fast food, soda, processed meat, processed cheese, white sugar, white flour products. They're all kind of, we don't allow that at all in the house. And she drinks a lot of water. Milk also, being a baby, she needs it. Like good quality dairy products, like sweet cream butter, good cream, good quality cheese. I tend to buy everything organic because I'm really worried about pollutants and toxins and preservatives and coloring, especially for my daughter, because when the kids are growing, their brains are still very permeable, and you know, all the nutrients that they take in pretty much can affect brain development, especially between 1 and 3 years of age. It seems to be like the critical window for brain development.
So that's How do you feel about other kinds of proteins then? You mentioned fish, which is a type of protein. Do you recommend high levels of protein?
No. For whom? For babies or for grown-ups?
I'm talking in general. I'm so sorry. I should qualify that. Not so much, babies definitely need proteins, but I'm thinking in the general public.
No, I don't think so. I think for grown-ups, for adults, the need for protein actually decreases with age, because we're no longer building muscle. And it really depends also on exercise and physical activity. The more you exercise and the more you use your body, then the more protein you need. But I think as people get older, they need less and less. We need more vitamins. We need more anti-aging, more anti-aging nutrients, more fiber to just keep our immune system really nice and strong.
Great. With your patients, are they mainly neurological cases, Alzheimer's cases?
No. We work with people who do not have Alzheimer's, but are concerned that they might develop Alzheimer's or cognitive impairment because of a family history of Alzheimer's or a connection to Alzheimer's disease or some genetic risk factors like it's called an APOE genotype. There are some genetic factors that don't make you develop Alzheimer's, but they increase your risk. And people are now able to find out using tests like 23andMe or these other genetic testings that are directly to the consumer. And so they're concerned about their brain health, and they seek for advice. So we're actually working with people who are very, very healthy cognitively.
Oh, that's good. Well, I can't wait to take a look at your book. It's coming out soon, and it's called Brain Food, The Surprising Science of Eating for Cognitive Power. And you should learn more about Lisa Moscone, Dr. Moscone. It's LisaMoscone.com. And that's, again, www.lisamoscone.com. Thank you so much for being on our show, Dr. Moscone. And everyone out there, if you enjoy the show, we would love it if you can leave us a raving review on iTunes. And do connect with me on Instagram and Facebook. I also do a great deal of phone consultations as well as Facebooking and Skyping with people all around the world. So if you need help, just go to my website, drsuzanne.com, for my contact info. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.